This is the True Voice Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Back in 2011, I started a social business agency called True Voice Media. In 2013, I launched this podcast because my audience told me that they wanted to learn more about how social media could help them grow their business, but they wanted it to be interesting and without all the standard social media hype and BS. Just someone who will give it to them straight with honest, simple strategies that they can use today. If you're a new listener and that sounds like what you want too, listen to this episode. And if you love it, subscribe to our show. We'd love to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started. In today's episode, The Prodigal Son returns. Today, in episode 55, I got the chance to have a lengthy conversation with John Steyart. For those of you that have been following the True Voice Media story since the beginning, you'll recognize John Steyart because he's the first person that ever came onto the team to join me. He was my social media Swiss Army knife and storyteller, and he is among one of my favorite people in the industry. He's someone who I have a great deal of respect for. I regard him as a peer, and I am beyond proud of the career path that he has taken and how much he has developed as a professional and someone to be respected in this industry. Him coming back to the show today is a really extraordinary moment for me because he is actually the reason why I began the podcast in the first place. Before we had conversations, we had Social Echoes, which was his podcast. He ran it. He had 20-some-odd guests, and you wouldn't even believe the caliber of people that he got on there, and he just asked them. He's a really thoughtful person. He's a really intelligent person. And in this episode, we talk about a couple different things. We talked about this concept of who gets to first, which is true in really any industry. But we talk about it in the context of our work in social media, how whose body of work gets to you first or whose type of perspective really resonates with you the most in your early stage in your career really helps to shape how you approach that career and what you believe to kind of be your philosophy of how you go about practicing what you do. So we talk a bit about that, and we also talk a bit about kind of these two different divergent paths of people who are quote-unquote good at social media, and we've kind of defined them into the two buckets of Gary Vaynerchuk and Seth Godin. And there's really people in our industry who are taking one approach or another. There's the people that are kind of out there in your face, they're a little bit brash, they share a lot of content, and you know, they are one type of personality that's perceived as a thought leader. Then on the other side, you have the more Seth Godin, Mitch Joel, Mark Schaefer types who are, while they're out there, they're not as in your face about it, and they're certainly not putting out the volume of content, and with the volume, using volume in two different ways. They're volume in terms of how much, like quantity of, but also volume in terms of decibel level. You know, that they're not out there and in your face quite as much, and they're kind of this quiet, thoughtful presence. And neither is wrong, neither is right, but it was a really interesting discussion to talk about how these two paths coexist and how they might impact one another in the future of social. So please give this episode a listen. It is a really proud moment for me. Sit down, relax, grab your favorite soft drink, coffee beverage, or alcohol, and just sit back and listen to the conversation between me and John. I think it's a pretty good one. Before you get going into it, though, just want to give a quick shout out to one of our sponsors that helps to fund this show, because believe me, it is not actually free. There's hosting costs, there is the cost of equipment, there's the cost of having these episodes edited and maintained, and all of the different things that go along with it. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Contactually, which is our CRM. They're a partner of ours, and I'm a huge, huge fan of it. I've been using Contactually as my CRM for almost a year now, and I have to say that it's easily paid for itself already in what a great system it is. And I've already turned on, at least in my own life, about 13 different people to it, and not a single one has come back with anything less than raving reviews of what a great CRM it is. So if you'd like to give it a try, We have a partner page that is set up. You can go and take a look at it, and I believe you get your first 30 days free. So you really have nothing to lose. The setup time will only take you a couple hours, but once you start using it, I'm pretty sure if you're in sales, you're going to see what a game changer it can be. So to learn more about it, just go to truevoicemedia.com/CRM, and that's also going to be in the show notes. So if you forget it, if you forgot to write that down or anything, just don't worry. The link will be there. Enjoy the episode. So here we are. The True Voice Media Podcast. You know, we didn't used to have a podcast. That wasn't always the case. We didn't have one. You know, before this podcast, we had something called Social Echoes. And Social Echoes was the brainchild of, I don't even know how to introduce the person that I have on the line with me today, because he's just my guy, man. So John Steyert is who I have on today. For any of you that are watching this, listening to this, whatever, and have seen the headline of the show and seen who my guest is, John Steyert was employee zero, the first person that I ever brought on. John and I met on Twitter, for Christ's sake, when I was looking for someone to help out with some data analysis, and he jumped in, and I just kept giving him more work, and then he stuck around, and we have become great friends. And this is the first time I'm having him back. He's the one who inspired me to start a podcast. He's the one who inspired me to start listening to podcasts. And I don't know how to intro this other than The Prodigal Son has returned. I have John Steyert here. John, tell everyone who you are and why I'm so freaking happy to have you on this show.
Jeff, it's a pleasure to be on the show, the second iteration of the True Voice Media Podcast.
Actually, technically third, because we went from Social Echoes, which was a True Voice Media podcast, to this was originally Conversations on the social media philanthropy. And then I decided that I didn't want it all to be on social media philanthropy. I wanted it to be a True Voice Media thing. I moved like the first 7 or 9 episodes over to True Voice Media. If you go back and listen to them, they still actually, I was actually doing this today, they actually still say social media philanthropy conversations. So this is actually, I think, round 3.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
thanks for the intro. It's always it's always nice to hear kind things from a really good friend and somebody who I respect as much as I do you. To anybody who is consuming this piece of media, my name is John Steyert, as Jeff so nicely put it. I'm currently the social media manager for Pet 360 Inc. in Plymouth Meeting, PA. We're a division of PetSmart. I do all sorts of stuff, but a lot of it and the philosophies and the way in which I go about the things that I do here in my professional life, a lot of them stem from the things I learned and did with Jeff. So it's been pretty cool to have the relationship that we've had and to be having a conversation that we're doing like this is not uncommon. But to do it in this fashion, in this form, I guess is the better way to say it.
To be recording it is really what is the unique thing about this. Because God, I don't know if a week generally goes by without us at least kind of pinging one another on one of our various messaging or whatever platforms just to be like, hey, have you seen this thing? What do you think about it? Or like, hey, check out what so-and-so is doing or whatever. And
it's usually Messenger.
Yeah, it's usually Messenger, and we're just kind of like, hey. So, you know, we stay in pretty close touch about things, and I think we consume a lot of similar media. We kind of open each other up to things that we find. And I think, you know, I don't know where you place yourself in the lexicon and world of social media thinkers, influencers, personalities, practitioners, whatever. But, you know, I genuinely consider you a peer, an equal among giants, and I'm really happy to have you on the show. We have so many things to talk about, and for those listening, I want you to know that none of this has been scripted, none of this has been planned. This is just what John and I do, and it could veer off into really weird territory where we just start talking back and forth to one another as Peter Griffin from Family Guy. It's a possibility. Or we could get into some really deep territory, but who knows? You know, one of the things I thought it would be really fun for us to talk about, there's a couple topics on my mind that you and I have talked about on different occasions, and one of which is this idea we talked about of who gets to you first. Like, I think that's a great one, and we'll elaborate on that. And then another is this idea, and I don't know what we'll call this, but we've had a lot of discussions recently, and I think there's been a lot of discussion about this in a number of different circles. I've seen Marcus Sheridan talk a bit about it. I've seen Mark Schaefer talk a bit about it. You kind of see this topic that crops up here and there. And I think it's the one that's replaced the you shouldn't be calling yourself a guru conversation. And it's that there's kind of these two camps of people that are out there now in social media. And when you think about getting to the next level, you kind of have these two paths, right? So you work in social media and you have these two paths. One is be more seen, gather more attention, get more attention, and in some cases do it at any cost. And then there's kind of the quiet practitioners. You know, whenever I think of the person who you don't see but who is a total rock star, you know who always comes to my mind?
Oh.
Lynette Young.
Yes.
Oh, I think God. Of Lynette Young every time that this comes up, because here's a woman who is doing awesome things, who is widely respected amongst her peers, who is brilliant as all get out. But you
started as an engineer.
Yeah. And like honestly has been doing the podcast thing since podcast was barely a term that was coined. So here's, you know, I think about this a lot and we've talked a lot about this and I think it's a path I'd like us to explore a little bit. And maybe that's where we'll start and we'll get back later on because I think it leads naturally into that who gets to you first. So I guess the question is, you've been batting this conversation around for a little bit, this idea. How do you get to the next level anymore?
It's funny to start with that specific question because I asked that question yesterday of Mark Schaefer. Mark has always been somebody who I've really respected, reading his work and his thoughts and things. And it just so happened to be that Thanksgiving of last year, he actually acknowledged my being in the audience whenever he is writing something or talking about something. So he sort of invited me into what he calls his alpha group. And it's a private Facebook group, and we got to meet him really, like, you know, more one-on-one in depth at social media marketing world. It was really great, and he's been very kind to me. So he did a Facebook Live yesterday, and he was just asking me anything, nothing crazy, just whatever you got, throw it at me. And I asked him, I said, I'm a manager at my company. I am just simply curious as to how you think that somebody can begin to rise, like not just saying like, what do I have to do? Who do I have to maybe quote unquote become to move up? And he said, it's funny that you asked this question because I'm working on a book about this sort of, maybe it's my next book. I think it is. And he basically said, in order for you to move up, it's not about who you are, not about what your title is, not about how much money you make, house, wife, have family, et cetera, et cetera. It's about if you're known or not and who knows you. So it's like, okay, I get the who knows you thing, but it's I think it's a grander thing Mark's painting. It's not, oh, I know him. He'll get me the job. It's just that if people know that people know you, if you're Ron Burgundy, you know, people know me, then you have the benefit of the doubt from people. You have that social proof. I think that's what Mark is after. And that's what he's sort of pointing at. And I mean, think about it, Jeff, from our perspective, like we see people in our industry who, what's the one skill they seem to possess? People know them. Yeah, there's plenty of people who are known and have the chops to actually say what they're saying. And then there's some people who have one or the other. And you'd rather, I think, in our world, I think it's almost like you'd rather know what you're talking about, maybe not be known, as opposed to being known and have no clue what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we talk at great lengths about that because there are obvious examples at either end of the spectrum, and we're obviously not going to be, you know, calling anybody out or naming names or anything like that. But you know, I think it's something that I'm glad, and I don't know, maybe I've cursed you by kind of instilling this in you when we were working together, but about this drive to be the best and know the industry and know how things work and poke at the box to try and figure out, you know, what are the limitations of what we're doing, try to figure out how human beings work, how their minds work, how, you know, things in marketing, not just if they work, and being able to replicate it, but being able to understand why it worked so that you can replicate the elements of it. You know, all those sort of things to me, when you're spending that much time doing research and looking at things and investing your time in your clients and in your work, how do you have the time then to go out and then brag and broadcast to the world? And when do you find time to actually continually increase your skills? You know, I think it's one thing for, you know, Kobe Bryant to get up at 4 a.m. to play basketball. It's another thing to see what he does on the court. But if he only went out on the court and never did that 4 a.m. practice, he probably wouldn't have been who he was. But what's interesting is that in social media, it's not like a competitive sport in that way. The competition isn't about knowledge. It's about visibility, and it's about frequency in most cases. And I think that's something that is a really interesting thing to explore, because you can see it in our political landscape now. You know, wherever you fall on any side of the spectrum, it's pretty obvious to see that Trump has found a way to leverage the ability to get attention to actually make himself successful. And he's done that in business, and he's doing that in the political landscape now. So I'm curious if what we're seeing is, and I'm curious what your opinion is on this, whether you believe that it's something that we're going through that's sort of a moment in time where we're kind of going through this and we're going to arrive on the other side, or this is more of a pattern where we're kind of sloping towards something, because I think this is not something that is an ascent to something wonderful, but instead, if we're just simply paying attention to the loudest and the most visible instead of the person who has maybe the most knowledge, are we moving towards idiocracy? So do you think that it's a period of time that we're going through, or maybe this is the trend? Hey everyone, I just want to take a moment out to thank one of the partners that we have that makes this show possible, WP Engine. You know, back in the days of dial-up, people would wait for websites to load, but attention spans are shorter than ever. Did you know that the average attention span has dropped to a mere 8 seconds? And for reference, the average attention span of a goldfish is only 9 seconds. So you only have a short period of time to hook people on your website, and if half that time is spent waiting for the page to load, you are sure to lose customers. Beyond that, what do you do when your website goes down? Who do you call? Well, today's best businesses are running websites that load quickly and have virtually no downtime. In the event something does go wrong, the best businesses are back up and running in no time. That's why the best businesses trust WP Engine for hosting. If you're running a WordPress site like nearly 20% of the entire web, you owe it to yourself to upgrade your hosting to WP Engine. It's fast, it's secure, and their support is amazing. We use WP Engine at True Voice Media, and over the next 18 months, we're planning to move every single one of our sites to WP Engine. That's how good it is. Right now, WP Engine is offering 2 months free when you prepay for the entire year. And when you get to the site, look along the top of the page for additional discounts and offers. Go to truevoicemedia.com/hosting to learn more about the best damn WordPress hosting on the web.
You'd like to argue that it's just a period of time we're going through, but it's trends burn off very quickly in our world, and just how the frequency at which they can be discovered, they can be consumed, and they can be, you know, put out of date. Things that are going to stick around, they have a longer burn rate, it's slower to be noticed by people who aren't paying attention beyond just what's being brought to them on TV. You know, we're seeing a lot of people having their own little reality shows right now, and whether they actually really should have their own reality show is a big question. Some people are able to do it really well. Like you and I were talking about it yesterday. Daily V, for as much as Gary V can be super annoying sometimes and just be completely a retweet machine of himself, Daily V is really cool.
Yeah.
And he's worth watching because he's doing interesting stuff. Like, I'm not doing what Gary V is doing. One of the reasons why I don't think share as much as maybe some people think a social media manager or a social person should be sharing is because, what do? I drive to work, I go home, maybe I go to the gym, maybe I play hockey, I hang out with my wife, I watch TV, I eat some cool food, sometimes I share it. I live a very boring life in terms of sharing stuff. Like, it's a very basic life. I go on vacation and then I share the photos because that's interesting. I'm just not sure if I mean, everyone thinks that their stuff is interesting, and their stuff is interesting to them in the pocket of people that they are really invested in. But I think we're playing too much to, and this is what you're talking about with Trump, and again, not to get into politics, but what he plays to specifically is the lowest common denominator. And I think that's what annoys me the most, is that, and we're all guilty of it because we live in a Facebookified newsfeed world, like you want just the, what is everybody talking about? How can I be included in this? Me too, gang. Haha, isn't this cool? We're all together. As opposed to being, you know, who are you developing into as a person, into as a family, into as a professional? It's really weird to see everybody saying me too, not just social networks. The people who are on the social networks need to have like that same checklist box going through the entire thing. So
I guess that, you know, it's interesting because you said, you know, I live a boring life, you said. I'm interested in your life. So I think that this kind of, let's turn the tables a little bit and let's assume maybe that these people who are being more out there, they're putting more of themselves out there. Maybe they think their content is interesting. Maybe they just know something that we don't, which is that you put stuff out there, someone's going to find it interesting. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
And maybe that's it.
Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe that's all it is. Maybe people have just decided, like, well, they had the conversation that you and I are having where it's like, oh, you know, I find it interesting. And then the guy sitting next to him at the bar is like, yeah, me too. And it's like, oh, really? Maybe there's something there. And yeah, you're seeing more and more of these people jumping on Facebook Live and preaching about something because they're all of a sudden a guru about something. And like, I don't ever think, I know that Mark wrote something about being, it's okay to be a social media guru. Mm-hmm. And like, it's fine. I think it's interesting to see like that's now an appropriate way of saying it, because never do I think that I'm a social expert. Like, there's things in which like I know way more than 85-90% of the population will about social media in this present time. But there's 10% of people in our industry that know 90% more than I do. So yeah. I look at them and I'm like, they're the experts, they're the gurus, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's that self-deprecating.
But what's funny is, you know, a lot of the people that we both, you know, love and respect in this industry would probably say the same thing in a moment of, you know, quiet reflection over a glass of bourbon or something. They might say, you know, there's so many people that know so much more than me or this or that. And I am, there's a little plaque that hangs on my wall that says, use the talents you possess, for the woods would be silent if no birds sang except the best. And, you know, I read another post, I don't think it was Mark Schaefer's, but where they said, maybe you should call yourself a social media expert. And the reason why is, if you think about it, the people who are searching for what you can provide might be searching for social media expert. I recently sent out an email. I think I sent it to you. I don't remember. You may have written back. I sent about 35 of them, in which I asked this question that basically I'd like you to give me, it's a quick 3 words to describe me. First 3 that come to your mind, positive or negative, and 3 to describe my company. And one of the ones that came back several times, fairly consistently, was unknown, or best kept secret, or things like that. And to a certain extent, that, you know, the best kept secret kind of one feels nice, but it's also extremely frustrating to consider that I've put in as much work as I have, and one of the first words that comes back to people is unknown, or you know, under the radar, or things like that. And maybe the answer is that you have to get more comfortable with this idea of putting yourself out. Because think about what we advise to clients, you know, and there's levels to all of this. We advise to clients, or you advise to your coworkers or bosses, and you talk about, you know, kind of that willingness for content, and that what we do, what we are saying has to be interesting. We have to think about interesting ways to frame what we do. And yet many times we don't do that for ourselves. And maybe there's this kind of dividing line. And let's kind of, I'm going to give 2 kind of, we'll call them like our caricatures of these 2 sides, right? So you've got the Gary Vaynerchuk, which I think is a pretty accurate example. Now, obviously we can all appreciate Gary's insight, his intelligence, but he is, for, you know, all intents and purposes, one of those people that is really in your face about being almost everywhere. And he's extremely loud, and he's out there, and he's brash, and he's in your face. And that's kind of one side. And then, you know, there's this whole legion of people that are kind of under him in that kind of same vein, who are just trying to be like Gary Vaynerchuk. And then on the other side, you've got kind of this Seth Godin style, right? Which is interesting when you had them, the both of them on the same show, on the Ask Gary V.
Amazing
show. But, you know, Seth is this quiet, reserved, thoughtful, slow pace, not in your face kind of marketer. And, you know, you have these two sides. And really, it seems like everybody's trying to be one of the two. And maybe neither is truly correct. You know, because we're not going to get another Seth Godin, and we're not going to get another Gary Vee, but in terms of their approaches, maybe there's validity to both. And I wonder if in the conversations that you and I have had, or the number of them that are going around where people are crapping all over experts and gurus or those that are way out there, if maybe we're missing the point.
I think maybe we are, because I think, Nate, the thing that I think you and I arrive at a lot of the time is we'll kind of, one of us will call the other and we'll say, God, I'm so frustrated by X. And it's the word frustrated thing that comes up.
Yeah.
Because we see it as a specific way. And I think it's almost like we're just as big of a hypocrite as maybe like a client or a company that we work inside of. And we say, man, why doesn't this person see it this way? When it really, it's that way. It's they look at this and it's not what they think it is supposed to be. So because their customers are actually seeing it an entirely different way. Maybe we're looking at it that way, the same. Maybe we're kind of falling into the same trap. And
well, just to, on that point real quick, is that I think a lot of the reasons why clients are resistant to a lot of these things is that it feels like a threat. And the threat is that they have to change their natural way of being. And it means that we have to put ourselves into a place of discomfort. So if you talk to the quiet, you know, Janice from accounting, she doesn't want to be out on Twitter or Snapchat or whatever. And obviously I'm not saying that Janice from accounting has to be on Snapchat or Twitter, but the point being is that, yeah, right. So the point being is that, you know, it's about putting yourself out of your comfort zone. And that is the threat of being outside of your comfort zone and being vulnerable to criticism, critique, etc. And oftentimes I think we use that word frustrated. I know that if I'm examining it and I see those people that are just out there, I feel somewhat threatened that they're taking my limelight and they are have the willingness to put themselves out there like that in a way that I tend not to. And I don't know what to do about that other than just to put myself out there, but I don't ever want to do it at the expense of the depth of perspective and knowledge that I try to bring to this industry and the way that I look at solving problems for clients. And I wonder if there is that kind of, if there is the ability to have that kind of balance where you can have that depth, but you can also have that breadth.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And like, I'm trying to think of like, if there's anybody who has like the best example of somebody who can be really outgoing, but still be reserved enough that when it comes time for actually explaining something through, that they get it done. And I mean, there's plenty of people who I think can like fit into that category. Like, I think Tom Webster's great about that. He's a showman. Scott Monty.
Yep.
But like, when I think about it for myself, like, I think you hit it on the head when you talked about it being a discomfort, right? And I think for me, like, yes, I come from a background of like performing, but the difference between doing performing and doing what is happening in our industry, or, you know, basically just the videoization of the world, is that we're still preaching, and still rightfully so, being authentic. And sometimes my authentic self is to be quiet, reserved, not showy, and be very calculated and analytical, et cetera. So I think I personally have I struggle with that. And I think it does make me uncomfortable to think of, is that the future? Is that what I have to do to reach a certain level of whatever I think I need to get to in order to grow in this industry, or to be more well-known, to be able to speak on the road, to start an agency, whatever it is, you know? because I don't think that my level of knowledge is lacking. There's always things you can add to your repertoire.
Yeah, I mean, just outside perspective, and I know I'm a little biased, but when I hear you talk about things that are going on in the world, I think your insight is you lend a depth to it that, you know, your average social media marketer does not. I think you're very thoughtful about it. But I think kind of what comes through for me is, and this might be really, this is kind of where I'm going to try and wrap this idea up, is that maybe there's just no right answer, because I think that there's a humility that that you have about you. You're a very humble person. I don't think you're very showy, though when you are on stage, you're an excellent performer. But I think you have a tendency to be very humble about it. And then there are people who are very braggadocious. And I don't think either of them is right or wrong. And there's obviously the spectrum. And I think this is going to lead to our next area where we're going to talk about who gets to you first. But, you know, we can name 100 people right now, all of whom we would respect, but their approaches are totally different. Incredibly smart people. I think that the thing that is the X factor for me here is, and I'm going to say the word even though it makes me throw up in my mouth, is authenticity. Is the people who are real about it and willing to say that there's things that they don't know. You know, someone who comes to mind is Pat Flynn, right? You listen to Smart Passive Income. Dude is brilliant, obviously, and he's been incredibly successful, but he's also extremely humble. And you listen to the way he interacts with his guests, he's naturally curious. You know, you look at someone like Jason Miller from LinkedIn. I mean, dude gets on stage, a total rock star, but he's, you know, one of the most down to earth, nice guys you could ever meet when you meet him in person.
And I think, like, look, let's think about it, like, perfectly to sum up, I think, your point too. Our boy Mitch Joel.
Yeah.
Perfect. Knows his stuff backwards and forwards, can write until the day is done, and yet is one of the quietest, most humble people. You hear him talk about it on 6Pixels all the time. He says, if I'm going to a new city or if I'm going to a city for traveling, it's a conference, he tries to set up breakfast, lunch, and dinner so that he's not alone, because he knows himself well enough that he's going to be quiet and shy. But when he's on stage, I've seen him speak. You and I saw him speak at Google, and then I saw him speak 10 days later for whatever crazy reason, thanks Derek Coburn. He was great. He commands the stage. He knows how to work the room. He knows he is known. But he's also not Gary V known. He's not Seth Godin known. And I think maybe that's what Mark is trying to say. So I know you want to move on to the next topic.
But I think this is kind of a natural lead-in, because I think, you know, if you look at kind of the disciple-like lineage of the way different people approach their social media, you can see a stark difference between people who the first thing that resonated with them was Seth Godin, whereas the people who the first thing that really resonated with them in this industry was Gary Vee. You can see that there is a very different approach that they both take to how they do what they do, how they tend to communicate, how they tend to approach their work, all those sort of things. And I think, you know, if I look at what I think, who got to me first, you know, the people that I look at and I'm like, these are the people that really shaped how I saw social, I would give it kind of, these are my kind of the trilogy, or the trinity, that is. It would be Seth Godin, Mitch Joel, and Brian Salas. So these are people who are digging exceptionally deep into how the human experience works and the foundations of marketing and where they came from, and just observing the world around us in a very, very in-depth way, as opposed to, you know, any of the other people that are out there. Not that their approach is wrong, but I think that that helped to shape and inform how I've gone about my work for the last 8 years or so, is that in reading what they were working on and how they approach things, I think that that's helped shape me. And what I would love to know more of, especially for anybody listening, is, you know, who got to you first? Who shaped your experience? And I know that, you know, a lot of your perspectives on things are very similar. I want to know, you know, who are your, if you had to pick three, who would be the three that got to you first?
Well, I mean, aside from you, because I think that the work I did with you and can really continue to do with you is a huge influence, because you took me from knowing what social media was for and evolved it into, here's what social business can do. Totally different perspective on things, and it shaped my world immensely. Jason Falls was one of the early ones, certainly, and his perspective on making sure that social was fun but still having a business case to it, I think, got me to sort of get people out of the thought process of just asking How many likes do you have? Mitch Joel certainly is one for me too. I don't even remember how I got to his blog, but I just remember really it's sort of like a Pringles can. Once I listened to one episode, I couldn't stop of the podcast.
Yeah,
and just the way in which he wrote. And actually, as funny as it might be, Gary Vee was one of the early authors and somebody who just sort of the passion that he had for all the social stuff, the early social tools. And like I read Crush It and I read The Thank You Economy. And The Thank You Economy is probably still one of my favorite books about social media. I gave it to my father-in-law for Christmas this year and he read it and he was like, this is great. And, you know, there's certain things that all three guys, I'm not always totally going to agree with, but the way that they mapped out social for me and just the way in which the business world specifically, the world in general, was shifting to social technology, social communications, what you talk about, social principles and philosophies, it expanded my worldview. And it wasn't just Facebook, Twitter, eventually Instagram, Snapchat, Google+, YouTube, Pinterest, et cetera, et cetera. It was, you know, there's a lot of data behind all the things and all the behaviors and actions people take. And I think we began to have the conversations where I would seek out, what's the behavior behind it? Why do people do this on this channel versus they do this in email? And when you begin to kind of pinpoint all those different things together and connect them and stitch them together, it creates a much more interesting and intoxicating canvas that you want to delve more into and you want to explore the paints and the different color combinations you get into. The people who get to you first shape how you're going to ask questions for a long time, maybe forever. Because when you first start out, you know, when you got me, when I got to you, I was just like, I'll do anything, you know? And it was because, not just because I needed to do something, it was because I was curious. And you fed that curiosity. You were like, okay, this guy just wants to do something. Here you go. What do you got? You're a raw piece of clay when you're first starting out. And anybody who recognizes that and is not just going to beat you into the ground and just sort of make you as miserable as maybe you are or were, is somebody that you want to have in your professional life or in your life in general. And they're really important people. And the people who I would reach out to on social, like Harrison and Richie DiMatteo and Kyle Hardy, were all really kind people. And they showed me different things. They showed me that online could lead to offline and back to online. It's a really cool conversation that I know we've had many a time before on the phone, about how important who gets to you first is.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that this is, you know, not something that's unique to social media, but for us it is, in that, you know, these are the people that shape how we see things. I'm wondering, you blow this sort of thing out and you begin to think about, going back to our original conversation about kind of like the people who are marketing and branding themselves and being out there versus the people that are, you know, spending more of their time on doing the work. You think about that and, you know, it makes me kind of wonder if the louder group is going to be creating more, is going to be getting to more people first, and thereby we're going to, is that contributing to the fact that we're getting more of this noise and more of these, you know, people that are showing up as you know, having a year of experience and calling themselves a guru and selling their online course? Is that part of it, is just that when they see that, that's what they naturally go after to mimic because that's what they want to be like? Because let's be real, we all kind of want to be Gary Vee in one way or another. And we all kind of want to be Seth Godin in one way, because we all want Gary Vee's, you know, impressive agency, impressive speaking fees, the ability to go on stage and curse up a storm if that's your thing. You know, I think all of us want that sort of freedom and that ability to express ourselves the way we do, but I think the approach is going to work for one person or another. And I guess the question is that visibility creating more of the people that we need to move this industry forward?
That's a good question. I mean, I think eventually, yes, but it might take some more time than we might be willing or wanting. Probably the wanting is the better word, wanting to wait out.
But I mean, I asked that question yesterday, and let me just add this to your upcoming answer. But I had asked that question, what does it mean to be good at social media? Like, what does that even mean? Because in one context, it could mean that you have lots of followers and you are great at getting attention and you're great at converting like 0.01% of your audience because you built such a massive one. But on the other side, you could have a small audience and be very muddy and have a very loyal audience. You know, which one of those two is good at social media?
Yeah, and I mean, the classic answer is, I think, it depends. It depends. And it takes a while, I think, to be comfortable to be able to say that, because it depends on what are you after? What do you want? And the answer I was going to give a few seconds ago was, it's sort of like you go back to my first speaking gig, which was a few weeks ago at Social Media Day Philadelphia. And at one point I start talking about how we all want everything. You know, we all want it. It's human nature to want it, to be greedy in certain respects. But it takes that ability to sort of say, no, you need to wait on this. You need to not be so forceful in that respect. Take a step back before you maybe insert yourself a bit more. I don't know. I mean, I know I maybe bide my time more than perhaps I should or have. Because it gets to that point where, you know, you're looking at somebody who has an Instagram account simply so that they can talk about their beach body stuff and how great their life is now that they're on Herbalife and they do Shakeology and everything's amazing. And they're yelling in that all the time. They might not be like yelling, but they're always talking about it. They're always in your face about it. And eventually they're going to realize there's not a whole lot of substance behind it. And I think I've always been attracted to substance. What's the depth at which I can pursue that rabbit hole and be not just entertained, but be, you know, delighted at what I find and be able to then delight somebody with that. It's a longer tail to being known. And I think that I just don't think there's as much patience anymore. You know, I think that part of the reason why everyone yells as loud as they do is because that they see it and they want it now. They want that same feeling of what a social like in all respects can bring you. They want to have that same feeling of what 1,000 or 100 or 1,000 Facebook likes and retweets can bring you instantaneously in the real world, in their bank account or something along those lines. And it's, for most people, it's not that easy. You know, it takes a long time. And I recognize that me saying that at 28 years old is a little weird because, you know.
Yeah, you've been at it a while. I think it's reasonable and you've been putting in the work and you've been grinding away at it. And you know, that leads me to, you know, what I'm really curious about. You know, we haven't worked together in a while, you know, on a professional level, you and my company. You've been out doing your thing for a while. And you've had a lot of initiatives that you've driven yourself. You've had being able to manage upwards and get things moving. You've had content projects. You've had people that you manage. You know, you've really gone out and carved out your career, you know, going from just doing a whole bunch of different random stuff with my agency in its infancy. You're out in the world now working as a social media professional. And I guess what I would want to, you know, check in on and see what you think is, you know, you've been doing this a while. One, how do you feel about, you know, working in social and where that's going to take you? And then two, are you optimistic about the future of what social media is going to be? You want to get involved in social media. So naturally, you go to Twitter, click sign up, and your username is taken. So you try another option. No go. Your backup choice is taken too. 15 minutes later, you've got a string of 5 random numbers after your brand name.
Then you go to Facebook, and it's the same story. But this time, you can't even use the same string of numbers as on Twitter because someone on Facebook already took that random string of numbers. If you're a brand, you know how important it is to get your brand name or at least have consistency across your different sites. It would be so much easier if there was one place you could go to search all of the social media sites you intend to use, and then right from there be able to claim them all immediately. Well, this isn't a hypothetical scenario. It's actually called Know'em, and it's exactly what you need as a brand or personality if you want to lock down your username across the web. Know'em has packages starting at $89 to claim 25 sites, and they go all the way up to $649 to claim 300 sites. So if your username is important to you, check out Know'em and let them do all the work. Go to truevoicemedia.com/brand to start your search.
I'll start with the first part first. I still love social media, and it's not every day that you love it, but it's the idea of something comes along, or you have some kind of interaction, or you meet somebody, and maybe it's either the relationship begins virtually, or you meet in the real world, and then you switch one way or the other, and it's like, this is why you love it. This is why I fell in love with this way of doing things. On the flip side, it's really exhausting sometimes. It's really annoying because there's so much of it, and you know that you're also sort of addicted to it. I don't like the fact that at times I want to reach for my phone when I shouldn't be doing that. I should be present, and it's something I have conversations with my wife and my family about a lot. And I don't do it as much as some people do. I certainly don't, document my life as much as a lot of other people. But I still recognize when I go to do it. The amount of opportunities, I think, that come through having done what I've done and what you've done in social are immense. It sets you up for so much that we probably don't even recognize is available to us. The things that we look at as annoying we take for granted are things that, I had a conversation with somebody yesterday who I would have never expected this person to not know the level of stuff that they didn't know. And they wanted to reach way above what I did as far as the title goes. They're way further in their career than I am. So it's really interesting to see just what the amount of stuff that we're exposed to in our world. As far as the next step, it's not next steps, as far as like what the opportunities are from here within social, I think they're, like I said, they're immense. You have to know everything within your business to be really good at it. And you have to know how long a package is going to take before you go and market it. And that's not just with an email, how emails interact with social, and are the campaigns looking the same? Do they have to look the same? What's the behavior level supposed to be? What's the relationship like on site when I send people to it? How many email conversions should we expect? Things like that. Like you have to be able to understand all of it to be really good at the front end part. You know, it's no different than being like almost like a small shop owner. Like you have to use social as the storefront, and everything else behind it is so important. And I think a lot of times people just look at social as just being social and that's it. I know it's not that way as much anymore, but there's still plenty of people who feel that way and think that way, that as long as you're getting engagement on Twitter and you're getting UGC via Facebook, that you're doing something right. And you might be. Maybe you are. I work for a pet company. Like, I'd love to get more and more stuff coming through Facebook and Twitter as far as different photos. But the questions then become why and what? What do you need? What for whom, and what will they do with it? Is it going to create a greater relationship? It might. But we have to follow through on specific promises. It can't just be social doing what social is going to do for another business. It has forced me to become better at so many different things. Just knowing the things that like social has evolved into. Customer experience piece, I think, is a massive one. You know, people don't care if you know everything, but they expect you to if they're asking you a question on Twitter. So you better be good at it, or you better have plugged into the organization as the somebody who's going to know that answer and is using Twitter as that tool. It's a lot. I know I've learned a ton, and I think that whatever is next, whether it is, you know, hopefully here at PetSmart, and it's or it's somewhere else, I know that I will be better suited for it because I've done things within social and I've either immersed myself in different things or just been exposed to something else through social than maybe some of my colleagues are.
You hopeful about the future of social? Think we're headed in the right direction with it?
With some things, it depends. Like if you're looking at like social technologies, I think are really cool. The back end stuff is really fascinating, and that's sort of where my attention is right now.
Well, there's like the consumer side and there's the brand side, right? And you go through this too because you work in social, and then you're also a human being that, you know, utilizes social non-professionally. It's just a thing that you have. And I think, you know, social obviously has blurred that personal professional kind of existence. But, you know, we working in social, we always look at it from the two perspectives of, okay, how do I advise my client or my company or, you know, my teammates or whatever? And then there's also, you know, how do I feel about it personally? And I guess the question I'm asking, and I'm kind of asking it on the two sides, is, you know, as a user of social, how has your experience been since, you know, we first started talking about it back in the day? And then professionally, if you look at where it's going, do you feel that we are headed in the right direction and that it's what you professionally dreamt it would become?
Professionally, no, but I think it's because we thought it was going to be a lot more cheery, a lot more
kumbaya.
Yeah, but even not like because you know, to go back to Falls has always been the one who said like don't expect it to be kumbaya, because it's not kumbaya, it's still business. But I think when, you know, we worked together in 11 and 12, I think we thought it was going to be people are going to get it and people are going to be happier for it, and it's going to be a better two-way conversation. And really, it's just fallen into, it's another way in which big media companies can dominate another aspect of your life. And that's fine in a certain way. But it's also like, it's not fine because it's not what we were expecting. From a consumer standpoint, yeah, it's always annoying to see different ads and things. But...
has the luster worn off for you at all? You know, I remember when Twitter first came out and Facebook first came out, I was really jazzed about a lot of it. And now I feel like it's more of just a habit in a lot of ways as a user. I find that I get more frustrated with it than I used to in the past, either because of the presence of brands or the presence of ads, or just I feel like over time, what used to be that the real name policy suppressed a lot of racism and bigotry has now really just enabled it to spread further and faster and given those people a louder voice.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think what I look forward to more than anything else is sort of like, you know, the Olympics are going on right now. And what are people talking about with the Olympics? That I'm really interested in, but it's also a real thing. So maybe, and it at the same time, I'm just as intrigued by Pokemon Go. And that's a social thing. That's a virtual reality and augmented reality all wrapped into one. It's a real thing. So like that from a consumer perspective, like the Olympics and Pokemon Go, two very different things, but two real things that people are doing, I'm intrigued by. What are the social ramifications of that online? That's interesting from both as a consumer and as a brand leader, you know, doing it for a company. You know, I don't know, Jeff. It's really... you get so torn by it because you want so desperately to believe that it's going to be different or that it's going to, people will come around to something. But at the same time, it's sort of like, this is the way that it is. Who am I directly to change it? And I think that if everybody has that perspective, then it's a bad one. You have to be able to use it in the way that makes it best for you. And I think that you said it right. It becomes a habit. Sometimes it's not the best habit to have. when it becomes that way, I think you have to step away from it. You know, whether it's in, if you can do it in your company, then you can step away from it. That's a good thing, because that means you can go and work on different things. And I've actually had the pleasure and the benefit of being able to do that, you know, working on different box inserts and different email segmentation projects and things like that. It opens your world up, and it gets you out of the social grind and things that maybe annoy you. So, I mean, I'm optimistic that there's always going to be something really different about what the world's going to be. Because I don't think I'm an overly pessimist. I'm not an overly pessimistic person. I tend usually to stay in the middle. So I think that the way that social's going right now is interesting. It's not always the way that maybe we thought it was going to, or that we're totally on board with. But it's fun when it works out really well, and it's exciting. It's a lot of fun.
Well, John, this has been far too many freaking years in the making to get us both together like this. And now that you have come on the show, it's going to be a lot easier, I hope, to get you back on the show, because far too many times I think something timely and relevant and awesome has come out. Who can I talk to about it? And you are among my favorite people to kick a can around and talk about what's happening in the world. So I do hope that it will not take me years and years and years to get you to come back. So do everybody that is listening right now a favor and swear to them that it will not take that long for you to come back.
It will not take me that long to come back. It's
good.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you as always. It's different. It's different having it being recorded.
Yeah, it is different.
I hope everybody listening enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's our first one, and I think we have years of stuff still to talk about. So, you know, I think our next ones will probably be a little bit more pointed. In this one, we gave a lot of shout-outs. So I think to wrap up the show, I'd love to do two things. One, I'd love to give a few more shout-outs to people that we know, love, and respect who got to us nice and early. So I figure we'll just kind of go back and forth on that a little bit. And then I'm going to ask you the question that I now ask every guest that I got from you, which is tell people where they can go and be social with you. So let's start with where people can go and be social with you, and then let's do a couple shout outs and be out.
Cool. Thanks again, Jeff. Anywhere online, as far as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc., you could find me, JW Steiert. So that's JWSTEIERT. Don't get thrown off by the EIE.
Just, I always remember it with old McDonald. EIERT. Yeah. That's how I remember it. Honestly, not even kidding. So let's do a little bit of the shout out back and forth. I'm going to go first. Amber Naslund.
Amber Naslund.
Yeah.
Travis Wright.
Took T-dubs from me. That's pretty money. I'm going to go with an obvious one, but he deserves his name to be said. Chris Brogan.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Chris Brogan's a great guy. I've already said Mark Shaper, so I won't do that. Tim Hayden. Love Tim Hayden. He's moving back to Austin. Still going to be a part of Zignal Labs. And Travis has his book coming out. Really cool stuff happening in the world of social technology.
Erica Napolitano. The Redhead Writing. She is one sassy lady, and I always enjoyed reading her stuff very early on.
Oh, man. Another one.
We'll do a few more. And they can be recent, too. We don't have to go back to the beginning, but just people deserve shout-outs.
Coca Sexton.
That's a good one. Social selling wizard.
Yes.
I'm going to go with someone whose book I'm reading right now, and I am absolutely loving. The incomparable, the incredible, and the man I cannot wait to meet in person yet again with a number of other incredible people, the man Michael Port. That dude's he's just amazing.
Had the pleasure of meeting him in San Diego in April. Very nice guy. Lives in New Hope.
Yeah.
So we should get together. Michael, if you're listening, please come and hang out with us.
Yeah, please do.
Another person we always like hanging out with, and you know, this goes back to the beginning, my man Harrison Kratz, doing big stuff on the West Coast. Seems like he's never working, always on vacation somehow.
All right, I'm going to give one more shout out just to round this out. And I think he kind of represents someone who I respect the hell out of. Not quite sure. He's just one of those people. He's brilliant. Generally kind of quiet, but when you do see him, he is a little bit on the cocky side, but I appreciate his swagger because he's earned the right to be cocky, and that's Ramit Sethi. He's just a smart dude.
All right, I got one more, and it's Eric Moss up in New York, my friend, my very sassy friend who is she was a community manager at Bitly. I unfortunately forget where specifically she is right now, but she's probably in a Warby Parker somewhere.
Yeah.
Eating lobster roll. So, Erica, thanks for being so cool, and hopefully see you in New York soon.
Awesome. So there is honestly a list of hundreds of people that we could give shout outs to and that we could appreciate. And hopefully throughout this show, we hit on a lot of them. There's plenty more. But if we didn't mention you, please be sure that we probably still love you. Everyone, thanks for listening. Come back again. John will be here. I promise. He promised. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, afternoon, or evening, or middle of the night, whatever it is. That's great. It's great.
It's good stuff, Lois. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Stewie. You've been listening to the True Voice Media Podcast, and you made it all the way to the end of the episode. I'm proud of you. But now that you're here, this is what we're going to need you to do. First of all, head on over to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. If you don't know where to start, go to truevoicemedia.com/feedback. Next, if you're not yet a subscriber, it's time you fix that. Head over to truevoicemedia.com/podcast to subscribe by iTunes, Stitcher, or email. If you really want to show us some love, visit our partners and sponsors who help make this show possible. I know the show feels free, but trust me, it's not. I sure ain't done publishing these episodes, so I sure hope you're not done listening. I'll see you on the next one. Take care.